In January of last year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Florida's death penalty was unconstitutional. Florida and a few other states at the time gave judges the final say in sentencing someone to death. But the high court ruled that only juries can hand down the sentence. So when Florida lawmakers meet again next month, they'll have to write new sentencing rules. In the meantime, the state's death penalty is in limbo. No executions have been carried out, and cases involving the 383 inmates on death row are on hold. Wilson Sayre, from Here and Now contributor WLRN in Miami, has been reporting on what all this means for the people on death row and their victims' families. In the first of two reports, she visited the last inmate to live in Cell 1, the cell Florida inmates stay in before they're executed.
Mike Lambrix has spent more of his life on death row than on the outside. Lambrix is 56. He's lost most of his hair along with his once athletic body. Every day for the 33 years he's lived on death row, he's worn the orange shirt of a condemned man in Florida. He was convicted of a double murder in 1984. And at the end of November 2015, Governor Rick Scott signed his death warrant. Mike Lambrix was set to die by lethal injection in February of last year. He was moved from death row to death watch. Death watch is reserved for people who've been given their execution dates.
The first thing you see is a board on the wall that says your name, your cell number, and your execution date. Every time you go in and out of there, you see that right there in writing just to remind you.
We talk in an interview room at Florida State Prison, an hour outside of Gainesville. Just outside, inmates were mowing the grass. On death watch, inmates get a lot more privileges than death row inmates. You get to call your family. Until recently, social calls weren't allowed on death row. Lambrix says the guards tend to be nicer. Even those that don't have a great reputation on death row show a more compassionate side on death watch. But death watch isn't supposed to be some kind of prison paradise where you can live out your final days in a more enjoyable setting. There's a practical side to it. Inmates are here so guards can watch over them more carefully, make sure they don't hurt themselves or hurt others. The fear is condemned prisoners have nothing to lose.
You never forget why it's different. Everything about death watch is specifically structured towards what the conclusion is going to be.
While Lambrix was on death watch, he had company, a guy named Oscar Bolin. Bolin's date came before Lambrix's. He was next to be executed. Bolin was in cell one.
He's going through his routine, I'm going through mine.
Preparing for their executions. Lambrix watched Bolin pack up his property in boxes.
Putting it up at the front gate for pickup by his wife.
Bolin had his final meetings with a lawyer and a chaplain. For Lambrix, this was like looking into the future.
I'm 10 feet away, so I'm really, you know, I can't get away. There's nowhere I can go. I put my earbuds on, you know, my MP3 is my escape.
As Bolin's appeals were denied, he became more anxious.
And then the day before the execution, he goes ahead and shaves his own chest because, you know, it's either you shave it or they shave it.
At 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the scheduled day in January of last year, the guards walk Bolin out through a door on death watch.
That looks like just a regular house door, but when you walk through that door, then you go a little bit further, you go into the execution chamber.
The state's two execution chambers are right next to death watch. In one, there's the state's electric chair, which hasn't been used since 1999. In the other chamber, there's a gurney with straps used for lethal injections. And as Oscar Bolin was walked out, Lambrix could hear people on the other side of the door, witnesses to the execution milling about for hours.
Every little sound down on death watch during this period of time becomes somewhat amplified, like a thunderous roar. Every little whisper, you know, I'm straining to hear everything that goes on the other side of that door.
Listening for any news, like it's called off or rescheduled.
All of a sudden, it got very quiet. No more whispers, no more talking. And that's when we realized.
The execution was going ahead. Not long after, he heard people filing out. And it affected him. He'd gotten to know Bolin. They'd spent weeks talking between their cells, and then he's just down the hall during Bolin's execution.
You know, I didn't sleep too well that night. But one of the things that really bothered me about the process after they killed him is that very early the next morning, they came in and they ordered me to get my stuff in my cell 3, and I immediately got moved to cell 1. I mean, you know, I just tell myself, what, you couldn't wait a day? You know, you just killed this guy. You couldn't just wait a day. So I got moved from cell 3 to cell 1, and that brought my reality home.
The reality of cell 1. For the past 4 decades, this is the cell everyone who's been executed in the state of Florida has stayed in.
That is the last cell.
Were you scared at that point?
Not scared. It was the reality of it. Just a few hours ago, they killed the guy. And it's not just going into that cell. It's what that cell represents. When you walk into that cell 1, there's a part of you that even despite all the hope that you might still have, it takes that hope away.
This was the second time Lambrix had been in that cell. He was hours away from his execution before, in 1988. Being in cell 1 changes you, he says. You have to wrestle with knowing the date of your death. You have to deal with that along with the other more mundane things, like divvying up your property.
Like my MP3, my most favorite thing of all, I wanted my sister to have that because she could relate to all the kinds of music I have. And I wanted my son to have other things that are personal to me, like my watch and a wallet that I had from way back. And you don't have a whole lot, but you try to figure out what would mean something to somebody else because you want to leave a part of you behind with them so that maybe it won't be forgotten.
Lambrix found himself making day-to-day choices based on the date of his execution. Should he buy new toothpaste or stretch what he has left? Watch the new X-Files miniseries on the TV in his cell? His date would come halfway through the episodes. He was fitted for his execution suit, dark blue with charcoal pinstripes, and a white t-shirt, short sleeves so they can insert the needle. All the while, Lambrix writes voraciously. When he talks, he tends to distance himself from his experiences. He says, you, not I. But in his letters and writings, we really get to hear what he thinks. He opens up in the first person.
January 2016. Time flies when you're counting down what is expected to be the last days of your life. But as I awoke this morning, I realized that I'm now down to 25 days. I smiled as I remembered a song on my MP3 player by country music legend Johnny Cash called 25 Minutes to Go. It starts with the words, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go.
Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go.
Then in his southern accent continues, the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell.
I got 24 minutes to go. Well, they gave me some beans for my last meal with 23 minutes to go. But nobody asked me how I feel. I got 22 minutes to go.
During each minute of his 25 days, Lambrix is hoping his execution will get called off.
The phone is like 5 feet in front of your cell, and you're just like looking at that phone, and there's a clock on the wall, and you're looking at that clock, because that phone is your lawyer's telling you you've got to stay of execution. You know, every moment of that clock is tick, 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 and you're looking at that phone just trying to mentally will it to ring.
For Lambrix, a little more than a week before his execution, the phone did ring. The U.S. Supreme Court had issued a decision in a case called Hearst versus Florida. The Hearst decision said the way Florida handed down death sentences was unconstitutional because of who had the final say. Juries, not judges, needed to be the ones to hand down a death sentence. So for cases being tried now, they're on hold and we'll have to wait until the Florida legislature reconvenes and writes new rules about how to sentence someone to death. For inmates who've already been tried and sentenced, the courts are beginning to re-examine many of their cases to see if their sentence should still stand. What's going to happen to Lambrix is unclear. He still has a signed death warrant, and any day now, he could find himself back in cell 1. For Here and Now, I'm Wilson Sayre in Miami.
Tomorrow, we meet two women whose loved ones were murdered in violent crimes and find out what they think and feel about the death penalty.